Thank you very much. Right. Well, we're going to move on and really look at two things. And from what you said, you're already moving in the direction that I'm going to be speaking. First of all, I want just to speak a little bit about being in a church with a high proportion of older people. And then secondly, looking at reaching out to older people. And in that second section, I want to look at both what we're doing now and what we will have to do in the future. So that's the possible agenda. What time is it we've got to finish?
You've got 40 minutes.
I got 40 minutes. Oh, that's good. That's good. Right, I got 40 minutes. Right. Let's have a look then at a situation where there's a high proportion of older people. The first thing I want to say is that should not be a problem. It should not be seen as an anomaly, although in one sense it is an anomaly. But it's statistically likely, if you go back to those funny slides I showed you at the beginning, there are just going to be more and more older people. And because the church is disproportionately made up of older people, then there's going to be more and more older people. Some people are talking about maybe within the next 10, 15 years, over 50% of people attending church will be over 65. Who knows? I mean, God can change things tomorrow, so never trust a statistician. By the way, I am a qualified statistician, so never trust a statistician. He will always manipulate the figures to make his point. And as I say, it's not to be viewed as an issue for despair. I remember a few years ago I was doing a session, something like this, and a young pastor came to me. And he said to me, my problem is most of my congregation are over 60, most are over 70. He said, I wonder what value can we have? And we talked about various things. And one of the things I said, not really thinking, just trying to find an answer for him, I said, don't you realize that you have the privilege of ministering to people as they enter heaven. So you have a particular opportunity to prepare people for heaven. And his face lit up. And he said, oh, yes. Yeah, there is value, isn't there? And Alfie went and he did that. And I saw him sometime later. And he said he'd emphasized that. And that had benefited the congregation. But it also led to a few people, new people coming in, because the older people had told their younger relatives that the pastor's talking about going to heaven. And people had come along to see what it's like to go to heaven. So you never know with these things. But it's not an issue for despair. We made the comments earlier on about young people not necessarily being the future of the church. Isn't it interesting? That when the Lord wanted to appoint a leader for Israel, he chose a man of 80. And when the Apostle Paul wrote to Philemon about Onesimus, one of his strong arguments for why Philemon should act contrary to normal practice, a runaway slave would be punished, often he would be put to death. And Paul's pleading for Onesimus' well-being and life. And Paul writes and says, I, the old man. The age was for Paul a strong argument for Philemon's action. So that we mustn't be overtaken up with demographics. Let me tell you a true story. I was taking a session, and this is quite a number of years ago now, And a lady came to me afterwards and she said, can I tell you my story? And she was an elderly lady. She was in her mid to late 80s then. And she was telling me about her church and she said, we had a church and it was all old people. And some of us began to worry about what would be happening in the future. She said, so three of us covenanted to meet every Wednesday morning for 2 hours to pray for the future of the church. She said, so we started doing that. We started praying for the future of the church. She said, what was interesting was our daughters began to say to us, what are you doing on Wednesday morning when you meet with the other two ladies? What are you up to? Because their daughters were unbelieving. And so she said, we all told our daughters, we're praying for God to bring new people into the church. And she said, the thing that happened then was, all three of us, our daughters began to say, why do you need people to come into the church? So she said, we were able to really explain the gospel. Because you will know, if you have unbelieving children, it can be sometimes very difficult to get a gospel conversation going. I have a son who sadly has gone away from the Lord. And he's an absolute genius. Well, he's very clever anyway. But he's an absolute genius at changing the subject. And every time I try to change the subject, he changes it more than I. So getting a gospel conversation going with some of your own family can be very difficult. But she said, they began to listen. And the long and short of it is that the three ladies, three daughters, all came to the church, got converted, brought their children, and their children brought their friends. And within 5 years, they had doubled the church in size. They had a Sunday school of significant size, and they had quite a lot of people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. The whole point being, God can work through older people in ways we don't expect. And I think we get, because we follow the culture, we are so taken up with demographics. In fact, I have to say, I only did demographics because I was asked to. I stopped doing demographics about 3 or 4 years ago, mainly because I found people so taken up with the figures that they forgot to think in terms of faith. And we mustn't do that. We must know the figures. We must think about the future. But God isn't bound by any age group. He can take a group of octogenarians and build a whole church. The point is, we are so into methods that we read the latest method that's come over from who knows where, Australia or America or somewhere else, and we think, oh, that's what we ought to do. Whereas my belief, I went to a church, and when I went, there was one person under 50, and she was 18 and went off to university, and we never saw her again. Within 3 weeks of me coming, she left. That wasn't because I came, it's because she started university. Well, that's my excuse anyway. But so all my congregation was over 50, and some were in their 70s. I actually had a congregation of 15 people, and two of those I brought with me, my wife and my father-in-law. And you know, over time, we didn't do anything exceptional, and this is what I'm going to say. We just did the essential things and built relationships. And by the time I retired, we had a Sunday morning congregation of over 70 and a total age spread. Most of the people, not most, but several of the people who were there when I started passed on. I don't know how much I influenced that, but that's what happened. But the point to remember is God is the God of all generations. He's not the God of one generation. He's the God of every generation. And we make generational differentiation because the culture does, not because Scripture requires us to. And I think if you have this situation with a preponderance of older people, you have a great place to prove what God can do. Because the world will say, there's no hope for that church. Now, God loves that. He loves when people write his people off. Because when people write his people off, he just goes and bless them just to despise the, just to, in spite of the world, just to show the world he is able to do what they don't think he can do. And I think we have to have that mindset. But how do you lead a church which is in that situation? Well, I think one of the first things, I put it first, not because it's the most important, but because it's the most practical. And that has to do with making the environment friendly. That means getting your congregation to be welcoming. It was the first thing I had to do in my church. They got into a rut. So when new people came in, they didn't expect them to stay, so they didn't really take too much time with them. And I had to get them to become friendly until it became the hallmark of the church that people actually said, you know, that's a friendly place to go. And I think that's important, a congregation that welcomes. And a congregation where things are clearly done. There's nothing, I don't like to say shoddy, but sometimes we can be a bit casual. I think when we work together, we do the best. If you can't do the best, don't bother. I really do mean that. If you can't do the best in your worship, then, you know, give yourself a talking to. Because when you do your best, people who come in take notice of that. And in fact, people who don't come in take notice of that because they become impressed by the attitude of Christians. I know I've been to so many churches, and I remember once going to a church and I got lost. So I asked somebody where the church is, and he said, I've heard of that place. Just a minute. Oh, yes, he said. That's the place where they're really nice and friendly, aren't they? And I thought, that is so impressive. And when I got there, yeah, the average age of the congregation was quite advanced. But they were really warm. And I think that's basic. And I think as well, make sure your premises are physically adapted. I have a hearing problem. In fact, I have a double hearing problem because at the beginning of last week, I should be wearing two hearing aids and the one on the right broke down. And Specsavers, I went to Specsavers because they said you ought to. So I went to Specsavers and they said, we'll get you the part within a week. Well, it's actually 8 days since they said that, 8 working days since they said that. So Specsavers haven't been quite so good. And I have a bit of a problem there. And I go to some churches and the amplification system is just so poor. And I think if you've got older people, one, for their sake, but also because of the way it reflects. And can I just put in a plea, and I won't say much about it, for having a place within your church where people can be quiet. And I say that particularly with problems like dementia and anxiety in mind. People with dementia sometimes, because of a noise overload, can begin to panic. And they react emotionally. Some people call it a meltdown. And they need somewhere to sit quietly. So there is a place for that. And I won't say any more about the physical things. And I think it's important, if you've got older people, to have activities that relate. But make sure that everything you do is multi-generational. In the church we were in, we did things with a mind to younger people coming in. And there were some things we didn't do, because we didn't have people who were competent. We had people who were willing to have a go, but they weren't competent. And I think that Philip Henry, Matthew Henry's father, Matthew Henry, commentator, back 300, nearly 400 years ago, his father once said, if you can't do what you would, do what you can. And part of the principle that he was teaching was, if you can't do it well, don't do it. Do things that you can do well. And I think that is so important, so that what you do has quality and the people who are coming know it's well done. And again, make sure your services stretch across the generations. In my own church, I keep nagging at the leaders because they have a tendency, and I forgive them for it, but they have a tendency to fall into errant ways. They will emphasize music that appeals to the younger generation. No, I've got no problem with that. I enjoy singing Townend and Getty and some of the more modern stuff, and I don't mind listening to it. But when I'm sat in the congregation, I'm amongst a group who we also like to sing Wesleyan Watts. You see, I believe part of worship is about making sacrifice. So I make the sacrifice of listening to music that sometimes I find a bit trite and irritating, you know, and a bit repetitive. And I think, oh dear, surely we can do better than this. And then I think to myself, don't be so arrogant. You know, that appeals to some people and that's reasonable. So I'm prepared to make the sacrifice. But younger people need to be taught that they need to make the sacrifice. And so the way to do that is have every type of music, have the brand across the all brands across the spectrum, and so that your older people are brought into the modern world, the modern generation. They have to think like younger people. That's important for them. Singing modern songs is educative. It makes older people relate to the real world. Some of us can so enjoy living in the past that we're not good for anybody. We have to avoid that. But we need to educate the younger people to relate to the past. Because the past has made what is present. If it wasn't for Isaac Watts, we wouldn't be singing many hymns at all. So we ought to sing one of his hymns. Even if it is only When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. Which, you know, of course, Charles Wesley said he would gladly have written no other hymns if he had written When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. So that's a good one to sing. There we are. Let's move on. And you have activities that are appropriate to older people as well. And I'm not going to go through those. I was going to talk about Snack and Chat, which a church near us has done. But if you want to know about that, talk to me later. Let me just say a little bit more about services that do not exclude. And I've put up about music, and I've already said about that, because I don't always, I look at my notes and I go in my own direction. I apologize for that. But I want to talk just a little bit about having the widest possible participation. When I started with older people, I worked in a church where I was the youth leader. We had a youth group of between 70 and 100 young people. So I was working with older people in the daytime, and then in the evenings I was doing things with this large group of younger people. And so one of the things that we did was we started to get some of the older people to give their testimonies in the services, to talk about how they became Christians. And we had a young chap coming whose name was Steve. He would occasionally come on a Sunday. He was wild. He loved rifles, and he was a member of a rifle club. But he was really a wild soul. And he was always disruptive whenever he came. But he came every week, so he disrupted us every week. So we got used to it. And he came one Sunday evening. And one of the people who was taking part was an elderly lady who had lived through the Depression. She had been a missioner with a city mission. And she was talking about how God provided for her during the Depression. And how food parcels would arrive on the door. And she was telling this. And I was watching Steve, and he was absolutely fascinated. And afterwards he came up to me and he said, "Was that true what that lady said?" I said, "Yeah, of course it was." He said, "God really sent food for her?" I said, "Yeah, God does that sort of thing." And so he was asking a few more questions. I said, "Go and talk to her." So Steve went and talked to this lady. At the end of a conversation, he came back to me and he said, "Do you know what, Roger? I just become a Christian. She told me all about the Lord Jesus, and she did it in a way nobody else has ever done it. And I want to trust Jesus, and I want to follow him." Well, I think Steve's following the Lord. I hope he is, because he's pastoring a church. Because an old lady told her story in an ordinary service. That's the point. We have to be more expansive, don't we? And it's important we do that. And that's why those of us who preach, need to apply what we say to all age groups. I'm a great believer in preaching that is applied. I don't believe you just tell people what the passage says and leave them to think for themselves, because the devil's too clever and he will divert their minds. Apply it to their lives. Know the people. And you apply it to where they are. And you apply it to every age group. You'll find Charles Spurgeon does that in his sermons if you read them. And get your congregation socializing. One of the things that I think is so important is that younger people can talk to older people informally. Because older people have got so much to give. So, this is some of the things you do when you've got an older congregation. Now, the problem with having an older congregation is that we're all influenced by the culture. And the culture divides the generations. So we live in a culture of age distinction. And you get that all the time. You know, the BBC changed Channel 2 because they want to appeal to a younger audience. Because demographics matter. Actually, it's numbers of people listening that matter to the BBC and very little else. We live in a culture that is full of ageism and stereotyping. And we fall into that. And therefore, things are done age-related. Now, some things need to be done age-related. That camp, brilliant. You know, take the young people away. I used to do young people's camps in the first part of the summer with the young people I ran in, I looked after. And then in September, I would take all the old people I worked with on holiday. So I used to get 2 holidays a year, paid for by somebody else. It was really well organized. I can't get it done anymore. But we have this. And what we have to do is promote cross-generational activities. That's biblical. I was saying to somebody just now, a while ago I did a talk on intergenerational ministry. And I found over 20 different examples in the scripture of different age groups working together, from issues of mentoring to issues of younger people ministering to older people. Have you ever thought how much impact Mary must have had on Zechariah? You remember Zechariah saw angels, Gabriel came, Zechariah didn't believe, lost his voice, went home, and Elizabeth conceived. After 3 months, Mary then conceived, and Mary went to Elizabeth and spent 6 months living with Elizabeth and Zechariah. What an impact young Mary's faith must have had on old Zechariah, a godly man who lacked faith. I wonder how much that came out then in those wonderful things he said at the end of Luke chapter 1. Young ministering to old, old ministering to young. You want to emphasize that. And because that's where the proof that we love one another really shines through. But with an older congregation, what you have to think about is the real problems. And I've just listed them, and I've talked about these already. But I just want to raise just, I think, two for now. One is the older Christians feel themselves under pressure. Because aging brings discontent. That's one of the issues that we have to face up to. And therefore, it's interesting that the Apostle Paul, at the end of his life, can talk about having learnt to be content. We need to minister to older people in that area. Because you stand in a queue in a post office, though we don't use post offices so much now. But if you stand in a queue in a shop or somewhere, and you have a couple of older people in front of you, they won't half moan. Awful. It's the way people think, and we have to help our people to think differently. And I think the other thing is the pressure of an alien culture. One of the things many older people look for is acceptance. And because many older people in our churches have younger members of their family who are not Christian, they can be sucked into values and attitudes and behaviors that they would never have done when they were younger. I think of a dear man who was a very powerful and godly pastor and did a wonderful work. But when I meet him now, he talks so much more about what he watches on the television and some of the things he does with his grandchildren, which I know he would not have approved of when he'd been in his ministry. But why has he done that? Because once he lost his ministry, he lost his identity, because he was in a church that didn't cater for older people. And therefore, having lost his identity, he looked for acceptance, and he did that by compromise. And how sad that a godly old man compromises and ends his life doing things that deep down he knows he didn't want to do. And so it's important that we address those issues. So what I'm saying is that the way we do things should be like this. Focus on the word, prayer being at the center, maximizing the gifts in our congregation, being open to change. And that, to me, is the way with an older congregation. You can both minister effectively, but also, I believe, start to see the congregation changing and developing. But it's all under the hand of God. What I want to do now for the last 10 minutes or so is just look at some things around reaching out to unbelievers. Reaching an aging population for Christ. Think about older people in our culture. Well, They face all sorts of problems. They face loneliness. They face meaninglessness and emptiness. One of the things I do occasionally is I wander down to the golf club, the bowls club, which isn't too far away. I do that to sit on a bench. Because when you do that, within a few minutes, some older guy from the bowls club will come over and sit there as well and start chatting. Because some of the men who go there, they go there because they're lonely and they don't really enjoy playing bowls, but they just want the company. So if there's somebody there to talk to, they will talk to you. And so often, it comes up in the conversation very quickly how empty they feel. How they feel their life's got no meaning. And with that comes uncertainty and fear. That's one of the things about old age. You're nearer death. And with being nearer death, all sorts of questions arise in your mind. If you're a believer, you think to yourself, am I really ready? Being an unbeliever, you think, is there anything after death? Is all that religious stuff true? So those thoughts are going through people's minds. And with all that, there are regrets. The 3 o'clock morning wake up. Lots of older people wake up in the middle of the night. You talk to them, you find they will talk about how they remember things that have happened. And so often what you remember are things you regret. I spoke to a group of older people just 2 months ago on the whole issue of handling regrets in old age. There were about 80 older people there, and I would say at least half came up to me afterwards, because we had a lunch afterwards and I was moving around, and people came up to me and started to say, you don't know how true that is for me. I'm always thinking back and wishing I'd never done things. This is older people. This is where they're at. And of course, there's this whole issue about being disappointed and becoming a bit bitter. And that's what you find in some old people. That's where the grumpy old man syndrome comes from. It comes from that spirit of bitterness that arises because you're a bit disappointed how life turned out for you. Now, those are the people we are dealing with. But those are just wonderful issues to be able to get through to people. Because what we can do, and it was lovely to hear our brother talking just now about having relationships. That's why I'm very keen to encourage churches, if they've got the capacity, to do visiting, to start some sort of befriending process so you reach out to people. That's why I think it's good for older Christians to get involved in non-Christian activity. That's where you meet the unbeliever. You don't meet the unbeliever by putting a notice on the door saying, special meeting for older people next week. You might get one or two, but you won't get through to many. But you get to know them. When I lived in the East Midlands, because where I was a small town, big village, population of about 6,000 people, I got to know lots of people just by walking around the village. And I got involved, for instance, in a bereavement group run by the local health centre, partly because I'd worked in that area for a long time, but also just to get to know some of the people living in the village, some of the older people, because they were all older people. And I think we need to do that. And I think listening like Jesus, one of the great counselling lessons that you will get by studying the life of the Lord Jesus is how much he knew how to listen. Think of those two disciples on the road to Emmaus. How trying it must have been for him to listen to them wittering on, talking a load of nonsense. We had hoped. I would have been tempted to say, don't be so stupid. How many times did I tell you what I was going to do? But he listened. With the woman at the well, waffling on about Jacob. And he listened. And one of the things older people need almost more than anything else is somebody to listen to them. Because if they live by themselves, they spend a lot of time with nobody who will listen to them. And it's one of the best evangelistic strategies just to listen. Go somewhere where you can listen with people to people. That's why the thing I was going to tell you about, the church I was going to mention, they have a thing called Snack and Chat. And basically what they have done, they have just told people on the area where they are that every Friday lunchtime from 10:30 to 1:30, the church will be open for anyone to come in, and they will provide bread, toasters, cheese, and one or two other things. And people can come in and make themselves sandwiches and snacks. And there'll be a free cup of tea, and they'll just do what they want. Because what they want to do is people just to come in and talk. And as our brother said, relationships work. They've seen half a dozen people in their 70s come in, then start coming to church, and actually come to know the Lord. And it's this listening, this being available. I was going to tell you about Bob the Builder on practical care, but I haven't got time really. Just Bob the Builder was a retired guy who didn't know what to do, so he started doing odd jobs for one or two of the old ladies in the church, who told their neighbours. Bob now visits on a regular basis over 50 older people and does odd jobs for them. And while he's doing that, he talks about the gospel. He has seen at least a dozen of those older folks now coming to church. Because he just chats, does his work and chats. He's just done practical things. And you see, and I talked about this whole issue of conversations. And therefore, one of the ways to reach out to people is to make sure our services are appropriate. We've already heard about how people will go back. They will. It's amazing what they remember. You know that if you're working with people with dementia. You start singing one of the old Sunday school hymns and they'll join in, even though they perhaps can't remember almost anything else. It's music actually is less affected by dementia because it's in a different part of the brain. It's part of the imagination system and music therefore is of tremendous benefit. And just making sure that services are appropriate. But I want to move on, which is why I just want to come on to the next couple of slides. First of all, specialist activity. One way of reaching out to older people is to do specialist. If you have skilled people in the church, then do it. This book, on brain and soul boosting is all about having groups of older people together and using things to stimulate their mind. So you have an afternoon where you talk about food. So you get people to talk about food from the Bible. And then you do that and you end up with a little gospel piece. And you can reach out to people, use the methodology. The book can be obtained from Pilgrim Friends Society. And it's a very good way of reaching to people in that category where there's memory problems and dementia or just worrying about dementia. And a lot of people are. So people will come to that sort of thing. And then there's other specialist things you can do. I've mentioned bereavement groups. One of the things somebody in our church, an older man, has started doing, he started a walking group. Because he loves to go walking. He now has about 20 people come with him on this walking group. So he's had to sort of coerce 3 or 4 Christians to join him so that they can be walking with these other people because he knows the area and he takes them to various places and explains things to them. And people seem to love that. But then in the meantime, when they're walking along, he wants Christians there so that they can get gospel opportunities. So those are things. I've gone too fast, sorry. I myself did a history thing because I rather like history. And when I was in my church in East Leek, I started a history group. And I had a few people coming along to that, non-Christians. But British history is just littered with evangelicals who've done all sorts of things. So you can bring evangelicals into pretty well every part of British history, from about the 8th or 9th century onwards. And you can do all sorts of things. You can even go on to bowls and sports. But what I want to close with, and with this I'm going to close, is the fact that the world is changing. People have a religious memory because when at school, they sang hymns in assembly and they did religious education, which was largely Christian. But I can remember when I was at school, that was changing. And certainly my sons, and they're in their late 40s, their experience was with much less Christian input. And the situation is getting worse now. But what that means is there is a generation coming up now in their 40s and 50s who will soon be that older generation we'll be ministering to, who have no religious history because of the difficult education system. So they'll have no hot knowledge of hymns and songs, little or no Bible knowledge. Often they'll see Christianity as being irrelevant. They come from an atheistic culture, and you will even find that they are anti-Christianity. I don't know if you find that, but I do find that. So the old hymn expresses it well. How do we respond to that? I would suggest very simply, we build relationships. We may not be able to have the services because they don't sing. So when we go to homes, we'll have to think differently in the next 10 years about how we do services. Maybe you'll have to read hymns. Or maybe you'll have to have people sing hymns almost as a form of entertainment, as solos and small groups, so that you have to structure it differently. What you've got to do in the future is make sure you do it really well and be good. My wife ran a nursing home, a care home, for 16 years when we were in Bristol. And some of the churches who came in those years were just disgraceful. And even now, I have links with certain homes. And some of the churches, they don't do it well. Well, because people have a religious history, they'll put up with it. But a future generation won't. You won't be able to use old people's homes as a training ground for your young people. People won't tolerate things not being done well. So we'll have to do things very well. We'll have to make sure we are relating. But what we can do that will always apply is that we can speak about realities, the realities of later life. And so you see, what I'm saying to you is this, that there's no harm in thinking out of the box. We need to reach out to the older people. It's a huge untapped mission field. If half the effort put into youth evangelism was put into older people's evangelism, we would see quite significant impacts being made for the gospel. I don't say do less for young people. Do everything we're doing for young people. Well, let's find the energy to do something for older people. My generation is dying without hope because nobody cares, as they should, for 70 and 80 year olds who do not know Christ. I know you do. But oh, we need to care more. We need to reach out. Because they are a dying generation. And I've run over 5 minutes again. I shall learn one of these days how not to do it. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Roger, for the challenge, for the biblical encouragement, for all the practical wisdom. We have about 5 minutes for questions. So Nigel's coming to get the microphone once more. Again, put up your hand if you'd like to ask a question. Just wait for the microphone. Okay, just give the question nice and loud, Steve.
It's not a question, Roger. It's just building on, you know, about 3 years ago, I had a letter from a man of 96.
Thank you. I had a letter from a man of 96 who lived in one of the homes in Arundel where I minister, and he sent a letter out on the Wednesday, second class post, and it arrived to me on the Friday. And the next day on the Thursday, he sent out a letter, first class post, that arrived to me on the Friday. I received both of them together. And the second letter sent out on the Thursday and said that you haven't given me the courtesy of a reply to my letter, which I happened to receive both on the same day. Anyway, I went to visit him on that day when I got two letters. He was 96. He had lost his wife for 30 years, and she was considerably younger than him. And he was bereft. Now, as a church, we've been praying for younger people, as most young churches do. And I think the Lord had a sense of humour, because in praying for young people, he sent a man of 96 across to us. And shortly afterwards, we had a remembrance service, and he told me about his father, who fired the first shot in the Boer War, and all things like that. But he was with us about 18 months before the Lord called him home. His wife couldn't go to church, and he had dipped out for sort of like 30 years looking after his wife. And he had a strong spiritual heritage of being in a choir and things like that. And he came to us, and it was a joy to see his faith reignited in his 97th and 98th year. And he taught a lot to us. He made certain utterances in the service because he was a bit deaf. And he thought nobody else heard him, but of course he did. And but he taught us a lot. And, you know, in this praying for younger people, the Lord sent along a 96-year-old man to teach us some lessons. And that's really what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, yeah. I think that just shows that God doesn't worry about the generations. He just worries about souls.
Mm-hmm. Another question?
It's not so much a question, but we go to Amring Baptist. Yeah, Amring Baptist. If you're lonely, come and join us. We moved down this way a number of years ago, and we visited two or three churches. No one spoke to us in those churches. And then the wife said, let's try the Baptist church. So... Oh, I said to her, and she said, no, there's someone there that goes, I don't like. So I said, well, okay, well, give it a try. So we went there, and this particular person wasn't there. And we enjoyed it. The friendship was unbelievable. Mm. You walked in the door, and the warmth, it was brilliant. 3 weeks later, the newsletter came out, and the first thing we noticed was that the address of this person that she didn't get on with or didn't want to know had moved to Spain. And since then, we've been going. It's such a wonderful atmosphere that a couple of years ago, or virtually that, we started a fellowship and fun group. and it was to invite outsiders in. And there was four of us to start with, and we're now getting an average of 20, 24, or something like that. All right, half of them may be from the church, but the people that do come in say, oh, it's so nice to talk to someone, to have a chat, to have a game or whatever. So I'm just saying that it does work.
It does.
We are concerned about the youngsters, but on the way here, my mate Dick here said, all right, we should worry about the youngsters, but let's look after what we've got because they can bring in things. Thank you for your time this morning. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I think that does highlight one thing that is very important. And as pastors, we have to think about this. So often, older people, you know, people in their 60s and 70s, decide they're going to move to be nearer their family. We need to make sure people know what they're doing. Because what you say is true. I've known so many people who may be in their 70s move to a new church and find they can't make relationships. Becomes that bit more difficult, and people in churches so often have their fixed relationships, particularly older people. Let's be honest, they can be very sort of introverted and they've got their little group of friends, and new people coming in can find that so difficult to cope with. And it can be very difficult. When my wife and I decided to move from East Leek back down to near our family, we visited a tremendous number of churches. And I have to say, so many, when they spoke to us, people said, oh, what are you doing? And we said, well, we're thinking of moving this way and looking at churches. They immediately started to tell us about everything they did for young people, which was lovely, which was wonderful. But one of the things we wanted was to be able to make friends. The church we're in, yep, we've made a lot of lovely Christian friends. But older people need to think very carefully about moving, because sometimes it can be going from somewhere where you know people into a place of loneliness. And that is an issue that, as pastors, we need to think about.
Okay, thank you. We're going to have to cut it there. Thank you, Roger. I'll let you sit down.
You're very kind.
And as you've, I'm sure, discerned, Roger's a fount of wisdom. If you have further questions, things you'd like to discuss, do chat with Roger over lunch.